We are on to chapter 9 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Dark Mark. "Don't tell your mother you've been gambling," Mr. Weasley said to Fred and George as they made their way slowly down the purple carpeted stairs. "Don't worry, Dad," said Fred gleefully. "We've got big plans for this money. We don't want it confiscated." Mr. Weasley looked for a moment as though he were going to ask what those big plans were, but seemed to decide upon reflection that he didn't want to know. They were soon caught up in the crowds, now flooding out of the stadium and back to their campsites. Raucous singing was borne toward the night air as they retraced their steps along the lantern-lit path, and the leprechauns kept shooting over their heads, cackling and waving their lanterns. When they finally reached the tents, nobody felt like sleeping at all, and given the level of noise around them, Mr. Weasley agreed that they could all have one last cup of cocoa together before turning in. They were soon arguing enjoyably about the match. Mr. Weasley got drawn into a disagreement about cobbing with Charlie, and it was only when Ginny fell asleep right at the tiny table and spilled hot chocolate all over the floor that Mr. Weasley called a halt to the verbal replays and insisted that everyone go to bed. Hermione and Ginny went to the next tent, and Harry and the rest of the Weasleys changed into their pajamas and clambered into their bunks. From the other side of the campsite, they could still hear much singing and odd echoing bangs. "Oh, I am glad I'm not on duty," muttered Mr. Weasley sleepily. "I wouldn't fancy having to go tell the Irish they've got to stop celebrating." You know what he's talking about?
Does.
Yeah. See, that was Sister Chris's problem. Harry, who was on the top bunk above Ron, lay staring up at the canvas ceiling of the tent, watching the glow of the occasional leprechaun lantern flying overhead, and picturing again some of Crumb's more spectacular moves. He was itching to get back on his own fire vault and try out that feint. Somehow, Oliver Wood had never managed to convey all of his wriggling diagrams what the move was supposed to look like. Harry saw himself in robes that had his name on at the back, and imagined the sensation of hearing a 100,000-strong crowd roar as Ludo Bagman's voice echoed through the stadium, "I give you Potter." Harry never knew whether or not he had actually dropped off to sleep. His fantasies of flying like Crumb might well have slipped into actual dreams. All he knew was that, quite suddenly, Mr. Weasley was shouting, "Get up, Ron! Harry, get up now! This is urgent!" Harry sat up quickly, and the top of his head hit canvas. "What's the matter?" he said. Dimly, he could tell that something was wrong. The noises in the campsite had changed. The singing had stopped. He could hear screams and the sound of people running. He slipped down from the bunk and reached for his clothes, but Mr. Weasley, who had pulled on his jeans over his pajamas, said, "No time, Harry. Grab a jacket and get outside, quickly." Harry did as he was told and hurried out the tent, Ron at his heels. By the light of the few fires that were still burning, he could see people running away into the woods, fleeing something that was moving across the field toward them, something that was emitting odd flashes of light and noises like gunfire. Loud jeering, roars of laughter, and drunken yells were drifting toward them. Then came a burst of strong green light which illuminated the scene. A crowd of wizards, tightly packed and moving toward together with wands pointed straight upward, was marching slowly across the field. Harry squinted at them. They didn't seem to have faces. And then he realized that their heads were hooded and their faces masked. High above them, floating in midair, four struggling figures were being contorted into grotesque shapes. It was as though the masked wizards on the ground were puppeteers and the people above them were marionettes, operated by invisible strings that rose from the wands into the air. Two of the figures were very small. More wizards were joining the marching group, laughing and pointing up at the floating bodies. Tents crumpled and fell as the marching crowd swelled. Once or twice, Harry saw one of the marchers blast a tent out of his way with his wand. Several caught fire. The floating people were suddenly illuminated as they passed over a burning tent and Harry recognized one of them, Mr. Roberts, the campsite manager. The other three looked like they might be his wife and children. One of the marchers below flipped Mrs. Roberts upside down with his wand. Her nightdress fell to reveal voluminous drawers, and she struggled to cover herself up as the crowd below her screeched and hooted with glee. "That's sick," Ron muttered, watching the smallest muggle child who began to spin like a top, 60 feet above the ground, his head flopping so limply from side to side. "That's really sick." Hermione and Ginny came hurrying toward them, pulling coats over their nightdresses, and Mr. Weasley right behind them. At the same moment, Bill, Charlie, and Percy emerged from the boys' tent, fully dressed, with their sleeves rolled up and their wands out. "We're going to help the ministry," Mr. Weasley shouted over all the noise, rolling up his own sleeves. "You lot, get into the woods and stick together. I'll come and fetch you when we've sorted this out." Bill, Charlie, and Percy were already sprinting toward the oncoming marchers. Mr. Weasley tore after them. Ministry wizards were dashing from every direction toward the source of the trouble. The crowd beneath the Roberts family was coming ever closer. "Come on," said Fred, grabbing Ginny's hand and starting to pull her toward the wood. Harry, Ron, and Hermione and George followed. They looked back as they reached the trees. The crowd beneath the Roberts family was larger than ever. They could see the ministry wizards trying to get through it to the hooded wizards in the center, but they were having great difficulty. It looked as though they were scared to perform any spell that might make the Roberts family fall. The colored lanterns that had lit the path to the stadium had been extinguished. Dark figures were blundering through the trees. Children were crying. Anxious shouts and panicked voices were reverberating around them in the cold night air. Harry felt himself being pushed hither and thither by people whose faces he couldn't see. "What happened?" Then he heard Ron yell with pain. "What happened?" said Hermione anxiously, stopping so abruptly that Harry walked into her. "Ron, where are you?" "Oh, this is stupid. Lumos." She illuminated her wand and directed its narrow beam across the path. Ron was lying sprawled on the ground. "Tripped over a tree root," he said angrily, getting to his feet again. "Well, with feet that size, hard not to," said a drawling voice from behind them. Harry, Ron, and Hermione turned sharply. Draco Malfoy, standing alone nearby, leaning against a tree, looking utterly relaxed. His arms folded, he seemed to have been watching the scene at the campsite through a gap in the trees. Ron told Malfoy to do something that Harry knew he never would have dared to say in front of Mrs. Weasley. "Language, Weasley," said Malfoy, his pale eyes glittering. "Hadn't you better be hurrying along now? You wouldn't like..."
That's another thing.
What?
Harry would never have been friends with Draco in this other universe, because yeah. Draco isn't good at anything.
Right, and the other one he actually is. It's changed.
Yeah, I know, but different. I think that guy's dumb, and I think that you're dumb, too.
Thank you.
That guy's a little autistic robot.
You don't want to apologize, do you?
Apologize?
For calling me dumb.
Oh, you're not dumb, I'm sorry. But I don't like that guy.
You're still mad at me, aren't you?
No, I'm just...
Why don't you come in my neck and I'll hug you?
I don't
want to. Go. I love you.
Keep breathing.
Okay. He nodded at Hermione, and at the same moment, a blast like a bomb sounded from the campsite, and a flash of green light momentarily lit the trees around them. "What's that supposed to mean?" said Hermione defiantly. "Granger, they're after muggles," said Malfoy.
You skipped ahead.
Ready?
Yeah, you did.
Oh, he goes, "You wouldn't like her spotted, would you?" That was the only line I skipped.
No, you said language Weasley.
Yeah, he goes, "Language Weasley. Hadn't you better be hurrying along now? You wouldn't like her spotted, would you?"
There you go.
Okay, so anyways, he goes, Do you want to be showing off your knickers in midair? Because if you do, hang around. They're moving this way. It would give us all a laugh. Hermione's a witch, Harry snarled. Have it your own way, Potter, said Malfoy, grinning maliciously. If you think they can't spot a mudblood, stay where you are. You watch your mouth, shouted Ron. Everybody present knew that mudblood was a very offensive term for a witch or wizard of Muggle parentage. Never mind, Ron, said Hermione quickly, seizing Ron's arm to restrain him as he took a step towards Malfoy. There came a bang from the other side of the trees that was louder than anything they'd heard. Several people nearby screamed. Malfoy chuckled softly. Scare easily, don't they? He said lazily. I suppose your daddy told you all to hide. What's he up to, trying to rescue the Muggles? Where are your parents? Said Harry, his temper rising. Out there wearing masks, are they? Malfoy turned his face to Harry, still smiling. Well, if they were, I wouldn't be likely to tell you, would I, Potter? Oh, come on, said Hermione, with a disgusted look at Malfoy. Let's go find the others. Keep that big bushy head down, Granger, sneered Malfoy. Oh, come on, Harry repeated, and she pulled Harry and Ron up the path again. I'll bet you anything his dad is one of that masked lot, said Ron hotly. Well, with any luck, the Ministry will catch him, said Hermione fervently. Oh, I can't believe this. Where have the others got to? Fred, George, and Ginny were nowhere to be seen. Though the path was packed with plenty of other people, all looking nervously over their shoulders toward the commotion back at the campsite. A huddle of teenagers in pajamas was arguing vociferously a little way along the path. When they saw Harry, Ron, and Hermione, a girl with thick curly hair turned and said quickly, Oui, Madame Maxime, nous avons perdu. Or what? Said Ron. Oh, the girl who had spoken back turned her back on him and they walked away. They distinctly heard her say, Hogwarts. Beau Baton, muttered Hermione. Sorry, said Harry. They must go to Beau Baton, said Hermione. You know, Beau Baton Academy of Magic. I read about it in An Appraisal of Magical Education in Europe. Oh, yeah, right, said Harry. Fred and George can't have gone that far, said Ron, pulling out his wand, lighting it like Hermione's, and squinting up the path. Harry dug in his pockets of his jacket for his own wand, but it wasn't there. The only thing he could find was his omnioculars. No, I don't believe it. I've lost my wand. You're kidding. Ron and Hermione raised their wands high enough to spread their narrow beams of light farther on the ground. Harry looked around him, but his wand was nowhere to be seen. Maybe it's back in the tent, said Ron. Maybe it fell out of your pocket when you were running, Hermione suggested anxiously. Yeah, said Harry, maybe. He usually kept his wand with him at all times in the wizarding world, and finding himself without it in the midst of a scene like this made him feel very vulnerable. A rustling noise nearby made all three of them jump. Winky the house elf was fighting her way out through a clump of bushes nearby. She was moving in a most peculiar fashion, and apparently with great difficulty, as though someone invisible were trying to hold her back. There's bad wizards about, she squeaked distractedly as she leaned forward and labored to keep running. People high, high in the air. Winky's getting out of the way. As she disappeared into the trees on the other side of the path, panting and squeaking as she fought the force that was restraining her. What's up with her? Said Ron, looking curiously after Winky. Why can't she run properly? Bet she didn't ask permission to hide, said Harry. He was thinking of Dobby. Every time he tried to do something the Malfoys wouldn't like, the house elf had been forced to start beating himself up. You know, house elves get a very raw deal, Hermione said indignantly. It's slavery, that's what it is. That's that Mr. Crouch made her go to the top of the stadium, and she was terrified. And he's got her bewitched, so she can't even run when they start trampling tents. Why doesn't somebody do something about it? Well, the elves are happy, aren't they? Said Ron. You heard old Winky back at the match. Herself is not supposed to have fun. That's what she likes, being bossed around. It's people just like you, Ron, Hermione began hotly, who prop up rotten and unjust systems just because they're too lazy to... Another loud sound echoed from the edge of the forest. Let's just keep moving, shall we? Said Ron, and Harry saw him glance edgedly at Hermione. Perhaps there was truth in what Malfoy had said. Perhaps Hermione wasn't danger. They set off again. Harry was still searching his pockets, even though he knew his wand wasn't there. They followed the dark, deep path deeper into the woods, still keeping an eye out for Fred, George, and Ginny. They passed a group of goblins who were cackling over a sack of gold that they had undoubtedly won betting on the match, and who seemed quite unperturbed by the trouble on the campsite. Farther still along in the path, they walked into a patch of silvery light, and when they looked through the trees, they saw three tall and beautiful vilas standing around in a clearing, surrounded by a gaggle of young wizards, all of whom were talking very loudly. I pull down 100 sacks of galleons a year, one of them shouted. I'm a dragon killer for the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. No, you're not, yelled his friend. You're a dishwasher at Leaky Cauldron, but I'm a vampire hunter. I killed about 90 so far. The third young wizard, whose pimples were visible even by the dim, silvery light of the villa, now cut in. I'm about to become the youngest minister of magic I am. Harry snorted with laughter.
I'm about to become the youngest minister of magic I am.
There you go. That's how it is. Harry snorted with laughter. He recognized the pimply wizard. His name was?
The bus driver.
Stan Shunpike. Stan. Who is in fact a conductor on the triple-decker night bus. He turned to tell Ron this, but Ron's face had gone oddly slack. And the next second, Ron was yelling, Did I tell you I've invented a broomstick that'll reach Jupiter? Honestly, said Hermione, and she and Harry grabbed Ron firmly by the arms, wheeled him around, and marched him away. By the time the sounds of the viola and their admirers had faded completely, they were in the very heart of the woods. They seemed to be alone now. Everything was much quieter. Harry looked around. I reckon we can just wait here, you know. We'll hear anything coming a mile off. The words were hardly out of his mouth when Ludo Bagman emerged from a tree right ahead of them. Even by the feeble light of two wands, Harry could see that a great change had come over Bagman. He no longer looked buoyant and rosy-faced. There was no more spring in his step. He looked very white and strained. Who's that? He said, blinking down at them, trying to make out their faces. What are you doing in here all alone? They looked at one another, surprised. Well, there's sort of a riot going on, said Ron. Bagman stared at him. What? At the campsite, some people have got hold of a family of muggles. Bagman swore loudly. Damn them, he said, looking quite distracted. Without another word, he disapparated with a small pop. Not exactly on top of things, Mr. Bagman, is he? Said Hermione, frowning. He was a great beater, though, said Ron, leading the way off the path into a small clearing, and sitting down on a patch of dry grass at the foot of a tree. The Limborn Wasps won the league 3 times in a row when he was with them. He took a small figure of crumb out of his pocket and set it down and watched it walk around. Like the real crumb, the model was slightly duck-footed and round-shouldered, and much less impressive on his splayed feet than on his broomstick. Harry was listening for noise from the campsite. Everything seemed much quieter. Perhaps the riot was over. I hope the others are okay, said Hermione after a while. They'll be fine, said Ron. Just imagine if your dad catches Lucius Malfoy, said Harry, sitting down next to Ron and watching the small figure of Crumb slouching over the fallen leaves. He's always said he'd like to get something on him. Yeah, that'd wipe the smirk right off old Draco's face, all right, said Ron. Those poor muggles, though, said Hermione nervously. What if they can't get them down? They will, said Ron. They'll find a way. Mad, though, to do something like that tonight when the whole ministry's out. said Hermione. I mean, do they expect to get away with it? They think they've been drinking, or are they just... But she broke off abruptly and looked around her shoulder. Harry and Ron...
She looked abruptly.
Oh, yeah. Harry and Ron looked quickly around, too. It sounded as though someone was staggering toward them, toward their clearing. They waited, listening to the sounds of the uneven steps behind the dark trees. The footsteps came to a sudden halt. Harry got to his feet and peered around the tree. It was too dark to see very far, but he could sense somebody standing there just beyond his range of vision. "Who's there?" he said. And then, without warning, the silence was rent by a voice unlike any they'd heard in the wood, and it uttered not a panicked shout, but what sounded like a spell. "Mors Marger!" And something vast, green, and glittering erupted from a patch of darkness that Harry's eyes had been struggling to penetrate. It flew up over the treetops and into the sky. "What the?" gasped Ron as he sprang to his feet again, staring up at the thing that had appeared. For a split second, Harry thought it was another leprechaun formation. Then he realized it was a colossal skull comprised of what looked like emerald stars, with a serpent protruding from its mouth like a tongue. As they watched, it rose higher and higher, blazing in a haze of greenish smoke, etched against the black sky like a new constellation. Suddenly, the wood all around them erupted with screams. Harry didn't understand why, but the only possible cause was the sudden appearance of the skull, which had now risen high enough to illuminate the entire wood in a grisly neon sign. He scanned the darkness for the person who had conjured the skull, but he couldn't see anyone. "Who's there?" he called again. "Harry, come on, move!" Hermione seized his collar and was tugging him backward. "What's the matter?" Harry said, startled to see her face so white and terrified. "It's the dark mark, Harry," Hermione moaned, pulling him as hard as she could. "You know whose sign." "Voldemort? Harry, come on!" Harry turned. Ron was hurriedly scooping up his miniature crumb. The three of them started across the clearing, but before they had taken a few hurried steps, a series of popping noises announced the arrival of 20 wizards, appearing from thin air, surrounding them. Harry whirled around, and in an instant, he registered one fact. Each of these wizards set his wand down. Every wand was pointed right at himself, Ron, and Hermione. Without pausing to think, he yelled, "Duck!" He seized the other two and pulled them down onto the ground. "Stupefy!" roared 20 voices. There was a blinding series of flashes, and Harry felt the hair on his head ripple, as though a powerful wind had swept the clearing. Raising his head a fraction of an inch, he saw a jet of fiery red lights flying above them from the wizard's wands, crossing one another, bouncing off tree trunks, rebounding into darkness. "Stop!" yelled a voice he recognized. "Stop, that's my son!" Harry's hair started blowing about him. He raised his head a little higher. The wizard in front of him had lowered his wand. He rolled over and saw Mr. Weasley striding toward them, looking terrified. "Ron, Harry," his voice sounded shaky. "Hermione, are you all right?" "Out of the way, Arthur," said a cold, curt voice. It was Mr. Crouch. He and the other ministry wizards were closing in on them. Harry got to his face. Mr. Crouch's face... Sorry. He got to his feet to face them. Mr. Crouch's face was taut with rage. "Which of you did it?" he snapped, his sharp eyes darting between them. "Which of you conjured the dark mark?" "We didn't do that," said Harry, gesturing up at the skull. "We didn't do anything," said Ron, who was rubbing his elbow and looking indignantly at his father. "What did you want to attack us for?" "Do not lie," shouted Mr. Crouch. His wand was still pointed directly at Ron. His eyes were popping, and he looked slightly mad. "You've been discovered at the scene of the crime." "Barty," whispered a witch in a low, long woolen dressing gown. "They're kids. He'd never been able to be able to. Where did the mark come from, you three? Said Mr. Weasley quickly. Over there, said Hermione shakily, pointing at the place where they heard the noise. There was someone behind the trees. He shouted words and incantations. Oh, stood over there, did they? Said Mr. Crouch, turning his popping eyes on Hermione now, disbelief etched all over his face. Said an incantation, did they? You seem very well informed about how that mark is summoned, Missy. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But none of the Ministry wizards, apart from Mr. Crouch, seemed to think it remotely likely that Harry, Ron, or Hermione had conjured the skull.
That's because it's not. It's only possible for a Death Eater to summon the Dark Mark. And he would have known that since he's a Ministry wizard. And you have to have, like, the Dark Mark on you in order to be able to conjure the Dark Mark. They could just search her person.
Wait, I don't think that's true, because don't you remember who conjured it?
No, who? No, tell me.
I think it was Winky. Wasn't
Why?
It? With Harry's wand.
Why does she do it?
Didn't, what's his name? Bagman? Who is Winky?
Crouches.
Is he Crouches?
Yeah.
Someone, made her do it. Maybe Crouch did it. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure it's Winky.
Oh.
We'll see. I don't know.
Why does she do it?
I don't remember. I could be wrong. I don't think she does it on purpose. Shall we see?
Yes.
Okay. On the contrary, at Hermione's words, they'd all raised their wands again and were pointing in the direction she'd indicated, squinting through the dark trees. We're too late, said the witch in the woolen dressing gown, shaking her head. They'll have disapparated. I don't think so, said a wizard with a scrubby brown beard. It was Amos Diggory, Cedric's father. Our stunners went right through those trees. There's a good chance we got them. Amos, be careful, said a few of the wizards warningly as Mr. Diggory squared his shoulders, raising his wand and marched across the clearing, disappearing into the darkness. Hermione watched him vanish with her hands over her mouth. A few seconds later, they heard Mr. Diggory shout, Yes, we got them. There's someone here. Unconscious. But blimey. You got someone? Shouted Mr. Crouch. Who? They heard snapping twigs, the rustling of leaves, and the crunching footsteps as Mr. Diggory reemerged from behind the trees. He was carrying a tiny, limp figure in his arms. Harry recognized the tea towel at once. It was Winky. Mr. Crouch did not move or speak as Mr. Diggory deposited his elf on the ground. The other Ministry wizards were all staring at Mr. Crouch. For a few seconds, Crouch remained transfixed, his eyes blazing in his white face as he stared down at Winky. Then he appeared to come to life again. This can't be, he said jerkily. No. He moved quickly around Mr. Diggory and strode off toward the place where he'd found Winky. No point, Mr. Crouch, said Diggory. There's no one else there. But Mr. Crouch didn't seem prepared to take his word for it. They could hear him moving around and the rustling of leaves as he pushed the bushes aside, searching. A bit embarrassing, said Mr. Diggory, grimly, looking down at Winky's unconscious form. Barty Crouch's house elf, I mean to say. Come off it, Amos, Mr. Weasley said quietly. You don't think it was the elf? The dark mark's a wizard sign. It requires a wand. Yeah, said Diggory. She had a wand. What? Said Mr. Weasley. Here, look, said Mr. Diggory. He held up a wand and showed it to Mr. Weasley. Had it in her hand. So that's clause 3 of the code of wand use broken for a start. No non-human creature is permitted to carry or use a wand. Just then there was another pop, and Ludo Bagman apparated right next to Mr. Weasley. Looking breathless and disoriented, he spun on the spot, goggling upward toward the emerald green skull. The dark mark, he panted, almost trampling Winky as he turned inquiringly toward his colleagues. Who did it? Did you get them? Barty, what's going on? Totally clueless. Mr. Crouch had returned empty-handed. His face was still ghostly white, and his hands and his toothbrush mustache were both twitching. "Where have you been, Barty?" said Bagman. "Why weren't you at the match? Your elf was saving you a seat, too, gulping gargoyles." Bagman had just noticed Winky lying at his feet. "What's happened to her?" "I've been busy, Ludo," said Mr. Crouch, still talking in the same jerky fashion, barely moving his lips. "And my elf has been stunned." "Stunned? By you lot, you mean? But why?" Comprehension suddenly dawned on Bagman's round, shiny face. He looked up at the skull, down at Winky, and then at Mr. Crouch. "No," he said. "Winky? Conjure a dark mark? She couldn't know how. She'd need a wand for a start." "And she had one," said Mr. Diggory. "I found her holding one, Ludo. If it's all right with you, Mr. Crouch, I think we should hear what she's got to say for herself." Crouch gave no sign that he had heard Mr. Diggory, but Mr. Diggory seemed to take his silence for assent. He raised his own wand, pointed it at Winky, and said, "Innervate." Winky stirred feebly. Her great brown eyes opened, and she blinked several times in a bemused sort of way. Watching by the silent wizards, she raised herself shakily in a sitting position. She caught sight of Diggory's face, and slowly, tremulously, raised her eyes to stare up at, into his face. And then, more slowly still, she looked up into the sky. Harry could see the floating skull reflected twice in her enormous glassy eyes. She gave a gasp, looked wildly around the crowded clearing, and burst into terrified sobs. "Elf," said Mr. Diggory sternly, "do you know who I am? I'm a member of the Department for the Regulation and Control of Magical Creatures." Winky began to rock backward and forward on her ground, her breath coming in short bursts. Harry was reminded forcibly of Miss Dobby in his moments of terrified disobedience. "As you see, Elf, the dark mark was conjured here a short while ago," said Mr. Diggory. "And you were discovered moments later, right beneath it. An explanation, if you please."
He's not doing it, sir," Winky gasped. "He's not knowing how, sir."
"You were found with a wand in your hand," barked Mr. Diggory, brandishing it in front of her. And as the wand caught the green light that filled the clearing from the skull above, Harry recognized it.
"Hey, that's mine," he said.
Everyone in the clearing looked at him. "Excuse me," said Mr. Diggory incredulously.
"That's my wand. I dropped it."
"You dropped it," repeated Mr. Diggory in disbelief. "Is this a confession? You threw it aside after you conjured the mark?"
"Amos, think who you're talking to," said Mr. Weasley. "Is Harry Potter likely to conjure the dark mark?"
"There, of course not," mumbled Mr. Diggory. "Sorry, carried away."
"I didn't drop it there anyway," said Harry, jerking his thumb round toward the trees beneath the skull. "I missed it right after we got into the wood."
"So," said Mr. Diggory, his eyes hardening as he turned to look at Winky again, cowering at his feet. "You found this wand, eh, Elf? And you picked it up and thought you'd have some fun with it, did you?"
"He's not doing magic with it, sir," squealed Winky, tears streaming down the side of her squashed and bulbous nose. "I is just picking it up, sir. I's not making the dark mark, sir. I's not knowing how."
"It wasn't her," said Hermione. She was looking nervous, speaking up in front of those ministry wizards, yet determined all the same. Winky's got a little squeaky voice, and the voice we heard doing the incantation was much deeper. She looked around at Harry and Ron, appealing for their support. "It didn't sound anything like Winky, did it?"
"No," said Harry, shaking his head. "It definitely didn't sound like an elf."
"It was a human voice," said Ron.
"Well, we'll soon see," growled Mr. Diggory, looking unimpressed. "There's a simple way of discovering the last spell a wand performed, eh, Elf? Did you know that?"
Winky trembled and shook her own head frantically, her ears flapping. As Mr. Diggory raised his own wand again and placed it tip to tip. "Prior incantato," roared Mr. Diggory. Harry heard Hermione gasp. Horrified, as a gigantic serpent-tongued skull emerged from the point where the two wands met. But it was a mere shadow of the great skull above them. It looked as though it were made of thick gray smoke, the ghost of the spell. Deletrius! Mr. Diggory shouted, and the smoky skull vanished in a wisp of smoke. So, said Mr. Diggory with a kind of savage triumph, looking down upon Winky, who was still shaking convulsively. "I's not doing it, sir," she squealed, her eyes rolling in terror. "I's not knowing how. As a good elf, I isn't using wands. I isn't knowing how." "You've been caught red-handed, elf," Diggory roared. "Caught with a guilty wand in your own hand."
Couldn't they tell if it was, like, who it was, if they can tell the last spell little one did? Like, they can tell if you've shot a gun because there's gunpowder residue on your hand. They should be able to tell, like...
You wanna come in my nook now?
Yeah. Jesse wins.
No, we both win. "Amos," said Mr. Weasley loudly. "Do you want to go to bed?" "Mm-mm." "Should we see how much more grace there is to show?" "By 10 minutes
off?" "Yeah, just a little bit."
"Okay. Should we finish the chapter or no?"
Just like a couple more pages.
"Okay. Amos," said Mr. Weasley loudly, "think about it. Precious few wizards know how to do that spell. Where would you have learned it?" "Perhaps Amos is suggesting," said Mr. Crouch, cold anger in every syllable, "that I routinely teach my servants to conjure the dark mark." There was a deep, unpleasant silence. Amos Diggory looked horrified. "Mr. Crouch, not at all. You've now come very close to accusing two people in this clearing who are at least likely to conjure that mark," barked Mr. Potter. Barked Mr. Crouch. "Harry Potter and myself. I suppose you are familiar with the boy's story, Amos?" "Of course, everyone knows," muttered Mr. Diggory, looking highly discomforted. "And I trust you remember the many proofs I've given over a long career, that it despise and detest the dark arts and those who practice them." Mr. Crouch shouted, his eyes bulging again.
"You're not doing the shouting when they do it."
"Because you're right next to my...
"No, but you can pretend."
"Okay.
And I trust you remember the many proofs I've given."
"Okay. Mr. Crouch, I never suggested you do anything with it." You had anything to do with it," Amos Diggory muttered again, now reddening behind his scrubby brown beard. "If you accuse my elf, you accuse me, Diggory," shouted Crouch. "Where else would she have learned to conjure?" "She might have picked it up anywhere." "Precisely, Amos," said Mr. Weasley. "She just might have picked it up anywhere. Winky," he said kindly, turning to the elf, but she flinched, as though he too was shouting at her. "Where exactly did you find Harry's wand?" Winky was twisting the hem of her tea towel so violently that it was fraying beneath her finger. I find it in there, sir," she whispered. "There in the trees, sir." "You see, Amos," said Mr. Weasley, "whoever conjured the mark could have disapparated right after they'd done it, leaving Harry's wand behind. A clever thing to do, not using their own wand, which could have betrayed them. And Winky here had the misfortune to come across the wand moments later, pick it up. But then she'd have to have come only a few feet from the real culprit," said Mr. Diggory impatiently. "Elf, did you see anyone?" Winky began to tremble worse than ever. Her giant eyes flickered from Mr. Diggory to Ludo Backman and onto Mr. Crouch. Then she gulped and said, "I see no one, sir, no one." "Amos," said Mr. Crouch curtly, "I'm fully aware that in the ordinary course of events, you would want to take Winky into your department for questioning. I ask you, however, to allow me to deal with him." Mr. Diggory looked as though he didn't think this much of this suggestion at all, but it was clear to Harry that Mr. Crouch was such an important member of the ministry that he did not dare refuse him. "You may rest assured that she will be punished," said Mr. Crouch. "Master," Winky stammered, looking up at Mr. Crouch, her eyes brimming with tears.
"Master, please."
Mr. Crouch stared back, his face somehow sharpened, each line upon it more deeply etched. There was no pity in his gaze. "Winky has behaved tonight in a manner I would not have believed possible," he said slowly. "I told her to remain in the tent. I told her to stay there while I was, went out to sort out the trouble. And I find that she disobeyed me. This means close."
Do it, read again.
We'll show you.
"This means
close." That's what I tried to do. That's what I tried to do.
You're better than that.
I'm not a thespian. "No," shrieked Winky, prostrating herself at Mr. Crouch's feet.
"No, Master, not close, not close."
Harry knew that the only way to turn a house elf free was to present it with proper garments. It was pitiful to see the way that Winky clutched at her tea towel as she sobbed over at Mr. Crouch's feet. "But she was frightened," Hermione burst out angrily, glaring at Mr. Crouch. "Your elf's scared of heights, and those wizards in masks were levitating people. You can't blame her for wanting to get out of the way." Mr. Crouch took a step backward, freeing himself from the contract with the elf. Contact with the elf, whom he was surveying as though she were something filthy and rotten that was contaminated over his shoes.
Mm.
"I have no use for a house elf who disobeys me," he said coldly. How's that?
Mm-hmm.
Looking over at Hermione. "I have no use for a servant who forgets what is due to her master and to her master's reputation." Winky was crying so hard that her sobs echoed around the clearing. There was a very nasty silence, which was ended by Mr. Weasley, who said quietly, "Well, I think I'll take my lot back to the tent if nobody's got any objections. Amos, that one told us all can. If Harry could have it back, please." Mr. Diggory handed Harry his wand, and he pocketed it. "Come on, you three," Mr. Weasley said quietly. But Hermione didn't seem to want to move. Her eyes were still upon the sobbing elf. "Hermione," said Mr. Weasley more urgently. She turned and followed Harry and Ron out of the clearing and off to the trees. "What's going to happen to Winky?" said Hermione the moment they left the clearing. "I don't know," said Mr. Weasley. "But the way they were treating her," said Hermione furiously. My voice is starting to go blue.
Mm-hmm.
"Mr. Diggory calling her elf all the time, Mr. Crouch. He knows she didn't do it. He's still going to sack her. He didn't care how frightened she'd been or how upset she was. It was like she wasn't even human." "Well, she's not," said Ron. Hermione rounded on him. "That doesn't mean she hasn't got feelings, Ron. It's disgusting the way..." "Hermione, I agree with you," said Mr. Weasley quickly, beckoning her on. "But now is not the time to discuss elf rights. I want to get back to the tent as fast as possible. What happened to the others?" "We lost them in the dark," said Ron. "Dad, why was everyone so uptight about that skull thing?"
"Did you just fart?"
"No." "Did you..."
Mm-mm.
"I'll explain everything back at the tent," said Mr. Weasley tense. Should we stop there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's stop. So that is where we will pick up tomorrow. We read for a long time. That's a 45-minute one.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way you're going to finish that when you listen to it later.
Mm-mm.
So you'll never get to hear when I can tell you how much I love you. How beautiful you are. How much of a sweet girl you are. And the best thing that's ever happened. So cute.